Chapter 13. The Triumph at Raucus. Upon the Marshall Square of 108 Beta Calipus 9.2, the whole of the Indomitus Crusade was arrayed in full. They faced the august Victorium, the vast edifice framed by gigantic statues carved into the remodeled hills solely for this day. A single cannon boomed. The bell on the highest tower began to toll 112 times, one for each year of the Indomitus Crusade. At this signal, a bizarre flock burst from the pillared upper gallery of the august Victorium. Servo skulls, cyber angels, elder prelates on grav-powered sermonizers and vat-grown gene constructs flew out over the square. They emerged in a fog of incense, the banners they carried stirring the scented mist into curling vortices. A dozen different hymns, sung all at once and with varying degrees of loveliness, competed with shouted exhortations to worship. As this aerial flock dispersed to soar over the Marshall Square, down the steps of the august Victorium floated, walked, crawled, rode and sang priests of every kind, accompanied by all their attendant devices. There were hundreds of them, from the richest to the poorest, from moderate cardinals to firebrand preachers. Between them, auto-preachers crabbed sideways on clanking legs, the mouldering brains of the martyrs within roaring out religious epithets through primitive augmenters. Behind the priests, unruly hordes of flagellants beat at themselves. Every section of the Adeptus Ministerium, with any pretension to power, had members present at the triumph of Raucus. They followed Rabute Gilliman like flies followed cattle, and no matter how often he swatted them away, they always came back. The stream of holy men went on for an hour, as if the carved range of hills were full to bursting with them. They filled the avenues between the warriors standing to attention, though they set no foot on the carpet running down the very centre aisle. None dared do that, for that was Gilliman's alone to tread. They sang and mumbled and prayed. A dozen bishops and all their aides and servitors and whispering confidants stalked after the priestly horde in pompous parade, each vying with the others in displays of opulence or contrary poverty. Finally, there came a veritable wagon train of sacred arks bearing the bones of dead saints and fallen heroes of the Indomitus Crusade, these also accompanied by immense throngs of the faithful. In their pageantry, in their sheer number and bombast, the priests almost overshadowed the arrival of the Primarch. Almost, but not quite. Frater Matthew was the only priest looking down upon the arrival. He was standing upon a wide prominence over the steps, carved from the flesh of the land earlier that week. There were 20 cardinals up there too, somewhere at the back in the crowd, but they affected a lack of interest in the lower orders of clergy. They were closer to the Emperor. They had no need to watch the devotional display of their inferiors. In form, the promontory of the august Victorium was, Matthew supposed, a sort of balcony with a balustrade and doors that led to the rooms within the hill and the long colonnade above it whence the cyber angels came. It had all the appurtenances of a balcony, but it was so immense that the word did it no justice. It ran for almost a kilometre and was crammed with officials of every kind. There were few warriors upon it. All but the mightiest leaders stood with their soldiers upon the square, many upon raised platforms or standing within the cupolas of enormous command vehicles, so that their importance was understood. Well, thought Frater Matthew, perhaps not so few warriors. He had counted them as they arrived, before the crowds got too thick. There were 36 chapter masters, a further 18 space marine lords, all the upper leadership of the remaining chapters of the unnumbered suns and their larger supra-chapter groupings, 6 adeptus custodes, 3 canonesses of the adeptus sororitas, 5 generals, various warlords and others of similar rank, Captain Felix, Captain Sicarius, all 20 of Gilliman's Victrix Guard, the Commissar General, the Admirals Primus, Secundus and Tertius, several rear admirals, dozens of commodores, more dozens of shipmasters, including Bray, and scores of other men and women of war. But numbers were relative. The warriors were 200 amid a sea of thousands of other imperial servants. navigators, psychers, astropaths, tech magi, bureaucrats, high lords or their representatives, although a few hundred of the lesser lords of the Senatorum Imperialis had come in person, hoping for advancement. Only three of the High 12 had dared make the dangerous journey, planetary commanders and other potentates. Not so long ago, thought Matthew, this gathering would have represented the very apex of imperial power. Not anymore. Not when a Primarch walked among them and led them. A son of the Emperor had returned. Everyone else was at best an assistant, at worst an impediment, to the efforts of the Imperial Regent. May the Emperor forever bless him. Faith suffused Matthew from the crown of his head to the soles of his feet. It held him upright like a scaffold. Without faith, he thought he might collapse, a boneless man overwhelmed by the glory of the Imperium ranged before him. Such colours there were, and so many great engines of war, so much faith. He could not imagine himself without faith. It gave him strength, and it gave him purpose. When he was with Rabute Gilliman, that faith burned in him so hot that his skeleton seemed afire like molten iron. Miraculously, the heat did him no harm, but instead filled him with powerful energies. When he felt like that, he would gladly have shot down the entire chattering mass of bureaucrats flocking on the balcony if it would have allowed the Emperor's son a freer hand. He hid these feelings from the Primarch, of course. His role in the Emperor's plan meant he had to. There was no shame in that. Reason was Frater Matthew's gift. He was no stranger to introspection. He knew himself better than most men did. In the Scholem Missionaris, he had questioned his faith, and it had nearly ended his life. When his teachers saw that he questioned it because he marvelled at it, and not because he doubted it, he was let be, though still discouraged from probing too deeply. He had continued to do so, of course, because to Frater Matthew, the one thing better than faith was its affirmation. In the library, he had learnt lessons that the Fraterist did not intend to teach. He kept his thinking to himself, but through his youthful explorations, he came to the philosophy that shaped his beliefs. The Emperor had a plan for him. It was obvious. Gilliman had chosen him because of that plan. He had tested his faith and found it sound. He could not fault it. The Emperor was real. He was a god. He was a force for good in a galaxy of horrors, and Matthew had pledged himself fully to his service. Faith was real. Faith was power. Long after he had reached this conclusion, he had seen the miracles of the Emperor with his own eyes. The first time, in that glorious moment, he had wept. But he could fault his hope. There was no rational explanation for hope. The Emperor was powerful, but the enemy was more powerful still. The galaxy was beset like at no other time. For every miracle Frater Matthew had witnessed, he had seen 10,000 sorrows. How, he wondered, in the dark watches of the night, could the Emperor save them? Yet still his faith kept his hope alive. Nothing could extinguish it. Not reason nor experience. It was irrational. He should have been wailing out the cry of the end times, but he did not. Provided he did his part, he had a sincere belief all would be well. Is hope foolish? He asked himself. He looked upon the serried ranks of imperial might, and he thought perhaps it was not. He prayed he could bring the mercy of hope to the Primarch also. A fanfare braid, brassy and short in the Macragian way. The horde of priests fell as silent as the assembled soldiery. Rabute Gilliman emerged from the carved face of the hill into stillness. He ascended steps up to a pulpit fashioned in the form of a giant crouching aquila, the double-headed eagle that was the badge of the Imperium, and surveyed the army before him. The Primarch was imperious, commanding, his face an ideal of nobility. Matthew smiled in the depths of his hood. From Gilliman's expression, no one could guess how much the parade of priests irritated the Primarch, but he took no pains to hide that from Matthew, so the priest had been genuinely surprised when the Primarch had accepted Matthew's idea for the procession of faith. The priest was shrewd and a fine judge of character. Already, he had formed an opinion of Rabute Guilliman as a man who was guided by principle above all else. But one of those principles was pragmatism, and that often trumped the others. If the Primarch is willing to grit his teeth and allow the Ecclesiarchy to trumpet his divinity, thought Matthew, he will change his opinion eventually. Matthew was a complex, patient creature. He did not care what Guilliman did or how he did it. The faithful part of himself deemed whatever the Primarch did to be right, even while the reasoning part of him picked apart his motivations. It didn't matter to Matthew why the Primarch did what he did now. What mattered was where what he did led him to eventually. The priest knew absolutely that one day Rabute Guilliman would see the light and accept his own divinity. There. Faith again. He smiled at the thought. Matthew tensed, suddenly alert. Guilliman was about to speak. A score of silvered skulls buzzed about the Primarch, recording his image for posterity. From what Guilliman had told him, these recordings were meaningless, as history could be rewritten as easily as the notes for a sermon. The Primarch looked at the flying skulls, and his regard made them retreat in dismay. The son of the Emperor did not see his own power. To Guilliman, the skulls were morbid mementos, machines nestled in the hollowed-out heads of the worthy. To Matthew, they were more. Clinging to the mortal remains, the spirits of the faithful remained, serving the Emperor beyond death. They felt the Primarch's scorn. That is why they veered from him. Why could he not see that? It is not my role to convince the Son of God that he is the Son of God, Matthew scolded himself. It is my role to serve him and to guide him through his own efforts to the truth. I cannot tell him. He must see. He resolved to shrive himself by confession or by whip for his presumption. Still, he could not extinguish his hope nor his ambition. If I am the one to open his eyes, he thought, if it is me who convinces him openly. That was enough. He squeezed the button hidden in the flesh of his palm. Sparking pain burst within his groin and behind his eyes. He gritted his teeth and swayed, close to collapse. But the implanted electroflail was not enough to break his immodest ambitions. He would have to punish himself harder later. Only in agony was there atonement. The aftertones of the last toll of the bell hummed across the gathering. Guilliman addressed the crowd.
The Indomitus Crusade has lasted 112 years.
A lesser leader might shout or posture. Guilliman spoke clearly and calmly, and his words carried the power of 1,000 guns out across the martial field.
You look to me and say, see, he is the son of the master of mankind. He has come to save us. He has brought low the lords of chaos. He has crossed the stars when all ships founder in the storms of the warp.
Guilliman paused for effect. Matthew saw his tricks. He was no stranger to addressing crowds. Knowing the art made it no less effective.
I say to you, I did not do this. It is not I who has liberated hundreds of star systems. It is not I who has provided reinforcement to dozens of our chapters or relieved beleaguered armies that they might fight again. It is not I who has driven back the dark. I am but one man, and yes, I say I am a man, though Primarch I may be, for my soul is human, and my heart, and my blood. The intent of my father was that I be the best that mankind has to offer. I am not.
He swept his gaze across the crowd.
You are. It is you, the humanity of all the worlds and organizations of this great Imperium, who have done these things. You are the muscles of war, its sinews, its heart, and its spleen. Without you, what would I have accomplished? I say to you, I would have accomplished nothing. Yes, nothing. You, all of you, must hold your heads high with pride. Without your efforts, the Imperium would have surely fallen.
He shouted now, and it rolled out across the square. Banners snapped in the planet's dusty wind. It was eerily quiet. There were thousands upon thousands of humans and transhumans arrayed on the martial square. The ranks alone of the Primaris unnumbered suns filled a quarter of the space. They were arranged into chapters, but their armor, colored in the liveries of their primarchs, formed huge blocks that brought to mind the legions of old. There were 20,000 Primaris space marines here, the rosters said, along with 40,000 Adeptus Astartes of the older type. 20 million men and women under arms, and the cybernetic battle congregations of the priesthood of Mars. War constructs of increasing size lined the distant back of the square, from the war robots of the Legio Cybernetica up to the sky-occluding bulk of the Titans. How could they not win?
"The Indomitus Crusade is a success," continued Gilliman. "I declare its task complete. By our blood and sacrifice, we have brought the Imperium valuable time to retrench. But we are needed elsewhere. We, who have fought together for 112 years, must part ways."
He paused again.
"The Indomitus Crusade is over. This triumph of Rorkos marks its great victories."
Still no one spoke, but a tension rose off the crowd.
"You are all to be reassigned. Shortly after this triumph, I shall give out new orders. Our forces will disperse and shall bring ruin to the enemy wherever they might be found. Though I send you away from me, I do so because you have won my respect. You have performed impossible feats of arms. Wherever you go, the warriors of mankind will see the honor badges of this crusade upon your battle gear. But they will not know hope. They will not feel protected. Instead, they shall rise up with certainty in their hearts and guns in their hands, and with a mighty roar they shall cast back the enemy into the formless warp for all time. You have done this. You will do this. I stand before you, humbled by the sight of you, the men and women who are the heroes of the Imperium."
Gilliman held aloft the massive hand of Dominion, its robotic fingers clenched in victory salute. The square erupted into a rhythmic chant.
"Gilliman! Gilliman! Gilliman!"
It was deafening and more. Freighter Matthew felt the crowd's exultation as a wash of power. The ecstasy he felt from their victorious cries made his faith shine as bright as a star. Where before he nearly collapsed from application of his electroflail, now he swooned in religious ecstasy. The pit of Rorkos seemed to dim in the sky, and the blasted, lonely deserts of 108 Beta Calipus 9.2 felt a little cleaner.
"My sons! My brothers and sisters!" Gilliman called, halting the chant. "In a moment, our new militant apostolic will bless you all, and deliver the words of the Emperor, my father!"
Another cheer, so loud it shook the ground. Matthew looked at the Primarch sidelong. He had yet to say yes to the appointment. He was going to, of course. Now he had no choice. He admired the Primarch's forceful will.
They could not fail with him as their lord. "I have news for my warrior brothers. The unnumbered sons have fought with a strength that would shame the legions of the Great Crusade. The time has come for you to be rewarded for your efforts. New assignments will be given, new chapters formed. Some of you will go to join the progeny of your gene sires, who will welcome you as brothers and provide you with places of honor, both on the battlefield and at the feasting table. But to those of you who are my sons directly, who bear my genetic heritage and the colors of the Ultramarines, I have one last thing to say. When we are done here, we have a new war to fight. My brother Mortarion brings pestilence to our home of Ultramar. I will not allow it to fall."
The Primarch paused. Slowly, he once again looked across the field.
"We march Former Crag!